You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer hanging with you here.
Sup?
On a Monday morning, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Rookies report tomorrow for the Buffalo Bills. We've already got some teams getting camp for the most part underway. Rookies have already reported for the likes of the Chargers and I think the Detroit Lions as well. Got SEC Media Day going on. We got the Home Run Derby later tonight. And we've also got some lists coming out ranking quarterbacks and such over on SB Nation and ESPN as well. You know, for it being kind of the dead period of sports,
we got some stuff.
The MLB All-Star Week kind of is always that. Not really. Which is kind of nice. Because I dread these weeks. Because it's like, you hope something has popped up that you're like, I can ride with this for a little while.
Yep.
But like QB season 2 came out well before this.
Right.
So that had run its course. We're not getting Hard Knocks yet. There was no other sports documentary out yet. I think the Cowboys one comes out later in July.
There's a Cowboys one?
Yeah, pass. about the 90s teams.
Hard pass.
So I'm going to watch it.
Harder pass.
That's coming out later. So there really wasn't anything. And then even MLB, I mean, it goes for a break for a week. I mean, you have the All-Star break.
Right.
You have the game, but that kind of means nothing. And the Home Run Derby's Monday. It's tonight. You can't carry that for a week. So you're like, all right, well, what do we got here? Well, fun enough, we've got a ton. That also includes, and that I did not even mention, most of the league's second-round picks have not signed yet. 30 of 32 have not signed yet. That does include Bill's second-round pick, TJ Sanders. We'll touch on that throughout the week as well, especially with rookies reporting tomorrow. That seems to have a lot of correlation to Pablo Torre's report of potential collusion within the NFL and
yes,
guaranteed contracts. We'll jump into that later on this week once me and Derek have kind of, I guess, both formed our thoughts, but also like just dove more headfirst into this.
We want to have a deeper dive about this before we talk about it comfortably, and I think that that's only fair. If we go on our current speculations, I have...
It's speculations.
It's little to work with or relatively none,
mm-hmm,
based on who you ask of us.
So we'll dive into that probably more this week, likely as early as tomorrow with
yeah,
rookies reporting, but... Did want to mention that because if you have been somebody worrying, hey, why has TJ Sanders not been signed yet? Both fair fear, but also most of the NFL has not had their second round pick signed. And one team that does in Cleveland, well, they have one of them signed. The other one was arrested this week for domestic violence charges.
No.
So with Quishon Junkins. So
not great, Bob.
Not great. On the quarterback ranking list, though, and this is something I've wanted to jump into. I've been waiting for this one to pop up, and this is Jeremy Fowler and ESPN. They've been doing this for every position. We enjoyed the conversation with James Cook, one, him coming in eighth. Deion Dawkins, I believe, was on the offensive line, top 10, while Spencer Brown was considered somebody I think that was either honorable mentions or was getting votes. I know he was on the article,
mm-hmm,
just not in the top 10. We've now hit the quarterbacks, and unsurprisingly, Josh Allen is top 3. He comes in at number 2, only behind Patrick Mahomes. I don't think that is surprising at all. He goes up one spot from last year's ranking where he was 3. This is unsurprising at this point for Allen and his career.
Right.
He has ascended to the heights of very few people can even argue X number of players are even better than him, let alone players at his own position. We have hit that point, and it has been a hell of a ride. And now it more seems like we're just seeing how far he'll rise the all-time lists, you know, as fans that enjoy that stuff. I will say, though, looking at this list, Derek, and Mahomes being one, not that long ago, I wouldn't have pushed back on it.
Right.
I really wouldn't have. But after the last 2 years, where, yeah, his team has gone to the Super Bowl and even won them, it hasn't really been all him. His production the last 2 years has dipped.
Including last year, where he was rather pedestrian on mm-hmm his standards. But I do think that there is enough there of, like, the physical talent's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And he is winning even when it's bad seasons. It's more or less, I think, like, the ranking of one this year is, this is kind of the last chance to be at one, big dog. And if you don't, well, then we're probably going to knock it down. I think it's it's acceptable for a means to an end, which is, yeah, we still think Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback right now, but I do think that that can change. Like, it's something where it's like, yeah, maybe it can change, but the guy has won so much, and he is still incredibly athletic and talented that he can reclaim that at any time.
And also, I mean, specifically in the AFC, he does just feel inevitable. Even when he's not having a good year, whenever they play the Bills in the playoffs, he seems to have his best stuff. And ultimately, both Super Bowls he's actually lost, I think most would argue, kind of was nothing he could do.
The team would, it would be a routine. When the Chiefs have lost the Super Bowl, they lose it.
They lose it, yep. It's not close.
They do not have a good showing in a Super Bowl, and it is all or nothing with them.
Mm-hmm.
You either get them winning, and it could be in a bevy of ways, either dramatic and close, or even going away comfortably. But if they don't show up, and it's that nothing, man, it is a nothing.
Yeah, both Tampa and Philadelphia really. And that's the thing. Both Super Bowl losses look similar because it is Mahomes just taking a beating the entire day. At least in the Tampa one, there felt like he was still making like awesome plays.
He was still trying to make plays. He was injured.
And he was still able to do it. The Philadelphia one was kind of just a wash.
It felt very
early. Like, by the start of the second quarter, it kind of felt like, ooh, as long as Philadelphia doesn't turn the ball over four times, this is going to be a walk.
And Philadelphia knows how to play a responsible enough game that was never going to happen.
But ultimately, the last 2 years for him, he's thrown under 30 touchdown passes. Last year, he's under 4,000 yards. Now, ultimately, he doesn't play the last game, but that still does count. He's under 4,000 yards. And that is pretty stark compared to the 3 years prior, where in 2022, he's over 5,000 yards, 41 touchdowns. He wins the MVP. 21, 37 touchdowns, just under 5,000 yards. And then, and I think maybe his best season outside of his first year, 2020, 38 touchdowns, 6 picks, and 4,700 yards passing.
I think it's because he started out like a bat out of hell.
50 touchdowns, yeah.
That he's seen in a much different light. Like, even these two down years, say he is more on like the top end, but not like 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards, like bat out of hell. I do mean that. If he doesn't start out like that, these conversations are much easier.
Like, probably,
You could start balancing him out compared to the rest of the league. But it is because he's already done that, and it's insane, and you think to yourself, well, he's still young enough that he could do it at any time.
Yeah, he's still under 30.
And he's still really good.
Oh, well, he is going to turn 30 this year, already has.
Oh, my God, where's my cane?
Start to fly through these years, man.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
But, I mean, that's the thing. Most of his career has just been otherworldly, incredible, really kind of the entire time.
We're used to him being one.
Yeah, it does lead to barely 4,000-yard seasons or just under and under 30 touchdowns to be like, man, really? And I do feel that way, genuinely, because I look at him, I go, it's arrogance a little bit, but like you were supposed to be the guy that mixes Peyton Manning stats with Josh or with Tom Brady's winning.
Right.
Like that's who you were, especially early in his career. And now the second half has actually been, oh, you're just Brady.
Mm-hmm. Like, which even then, I wouldn't even call that true in a sense either. Brady was always consistently good offensively once he got started.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once he got enough years under his belt and he became Tom Brady, the perennial problem, instead of it being just a great Patriots team, it was Tom Brady. Once that happened, he never really dipped after that. Pretty sure, there's only two times that he was under 3,000, or under 4,000, mm-hmm. excuse me.
It's a lot of his early career he's under it. Then once he breaks through once in 05, yeah.
Once he figures it out, he has never really slowed down from there, except his final season.
Which is still 4,600 yards passing, 25 touchdowns, 9 picks.
That's disgusting.
They do go 8-9, though. Like, they're not a very good team. He throws a lot because they're down.
They're gross, though. That's still gross, though.
And he
4,600 yards?
Now, by the end of Brady's career, his last four seasons, he does not throw under 600 passes in a season. 613, 610, 719, 733.
Which is more of Tampa and its reliance on him.
Yeah, you look at, I mean, Allen didn't even throw 500 passes last year. Burrow threw for 652, but we all know what was going on with his team. They were down a lot. Lamar hasn't thrown over 500 passes in a season yet in his career. And Mahomes, 658, 648, then 597, 581. And so that's the thing. He's still throwing the ball a lot. His is just more, you're seeing the yards go down. Obviously, they're not spreading the ball around. And that's a big part of it, too. Last year, looking around going, okay, we're all seeing the advanced stats on Worthy, right? He's been open deep. Why aren't you hitting him? Why can't you get the ball to him?
Because it's a low percentage play.
It's a low percentage play, but he's always been typically very good at it. But, yeah, it's still low percentage play. It's going to vary year to year. I think Allen's not a particularly great deep ball thrower.
No.
But he's had years where it doesn't seem to matter. He hits everybody. 2020 is one of those years, if I remember correctly.
2020 is the only year that really happens.
Where he's able to hit everybody.
Because it's a low percentage play. And what was one of the biggest concerns with the wide receiver group heading into the year last year? Who's the deep threat?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares?
Yeah, it's not a percentage play that he throws a lot.
Yeah. And if he does, it's like every other quarterback in the league where teams are defending it really well, so you're not going to throw it anyway.
Yeah.
With Allen in particular, it is. You're getting too high. We are getting too high with Josh Allen, and we're going to let him carve us up in a different way just because if he tries it, that means he went back to like 2018.
Mm-hmm. It is just, it's so curious, like looking at Mahomes and Allen. They're 1-2. And their season statistically with no context, like if you just blank looked at them, they're not particularly impressive in the modern day. Mm-hmm. They're good. They're very good seasons. They're not particularly impressive. Allen, 63.6 completion percentage, 3,700 yards passing, 28 touchdowns, 6 picks. His QB rating, 77.3. I believe that led the league. But ultimately, you're like, I mean, that's a good season. The QB rating's awesome, but the stats don't jump out to you. Mahomes, I've mentioned it. He's down below 4,000 yards passing, 26 touchdowns, 11 picks. His QB rating is 67.6. You look at a guy like Lamar Jackson's last year, and I know we've talked about this to death, especially the MVP race the last 2 years. 41 touchdowns, 4 picks, over 4,000 yards. His QB rating is 77.3. His quarterback rating is 119.6. He just is leading the league in most categories. Even his touchdown percentage leads the league. Burrow, we all know what he did last year in terms of just he let the league on fire. Yards per game, touchdowns, yards, completions, and attempts. Unbelievable. And yet, I don't really have the I don't have the thought process to put Burrow at one.
No.
I'd even argue I would probably have Lamar Jackson over Burrow. Burrow comes in at 3, and I'd feel pretty comfortable, and I'd put Lamar Jackson over Burrow. And part of that for me, too, is I like that Lamar can do more.
I do think that there is this relative ambiguity between those four quarterbacks of where you can rank them. 1 through 4, it is very comfortably in order, depending more or less on location of where you live. There's going to be a difference in order of the four quarterbacks, but it's inarguably who those four are.
So you're almost saying like it order them that as you may, the
order
list kind of starts
you
at
may,
5.
The real list starts at 5. Mm-hmm. Because it is going to be a mix of Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, Burrow. And where you live is going to depend on where 1 through 4 actually stacks up because biases are real. Mm-hmm. Let's not pretend that they're not. And I'm with you. I do think that Jackson should be 1. But Allen's still very comfortably sitting at 2.
Oh, no, I'm fine with Mahomes at 1. I feel a little uncomfortable about it. I think Jackson should be at least 3. I'd put Burrow 4.
But I do think I do think Lamar Jackson has made his case for 1.
Mm-hmm.
I think Josh Allen has made his case for 1. Joe Burrow probably has made his case for 1. And Patrick Mahomes has been 1 for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It's now just finally starting to become, we should start calling it into question.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fair. Over the last 2 years, that talk is deserved. But he can reclaim that at any time. Because all 4 of these players have similar skill sets. Versatility in terms of manipulating pockets. Jackson and Allen on a lesser scale, more dangerous in that than others.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of doing damage with running the football. Like, it's 2 very different tiers. There's Lamar Jackson, Cliff, Allen. smaller cliff,
mm-hmm.
Mahomes Burrow. But there is something to be said, though, about they all have, in terms of base style of quarterback play, excitable, cartoonish, even, improvisation to mm-hmm. them. All of them have it. And they all utilize it in an elite way. And that's where I do think that, like, yeah, comfortably, the list starts at 5, which is getting really increasingly more fascinating to me. Jaden Daniels.
I would say, if you didn't know who it was, I was going to ask who you'd maybe want there. But yeah, Daniels comes in at 5. Obviously has, I'd argue, one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time. If you add in, you know, playoff success as well to regular season success, almost 70% completion percentage, 3,500 yards passing, 25 touchdowns, 9 picks. Does, of course, win the Rookie of the Year. Also goes to the NFC Championship.
But also, I look at the rest of the top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fair argument that should be made that Daniels should be at 5. Because I look at the rest of the list and I go, all of it actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah, 6 is Matthew Stafford, 7 Justin Herbert, 8 Jared Goff, 9 Jalen Hurts, and 10 Baker Mayfield. With the honorable mentions being C.J. Stroud, Jordan Love, and then others receiving votes, Murray, Purdy, Prescott, Rodgers, Tagovailoa, and Nix.
Nix already, really? Okay.
But I thought he had a great rookie year as well.
But I can go ahead and argue against any one of these players at 5.
Mm-hmm.
Daniels, okay, it's only 1 year. We need to see what happens.
Right.
Stafford, it's been too many years. He's probably not a top 5 quarterback in the league anymore. Still really good. Still probably very deserving of being a top 10 quarterback. He will never reach that pantheon again because, you know, ages do have their limits. Justin Herbert is if man. But the problem with if man is I don't see him genuinely take over a team.
Mm-hmm.
Like he'll take over a game, but not a season. And in the biggest moments, he does crumble. Jared Goff.
Kind of limited skill set. Very limited for you.
He's everything I said about the top 4.
Yep.
And Daniels. Goff's a statue.
He's the antithesis to that.
Yes, he's
the
last
old school quarterback.
He's the last voyage of the pocket passer, the pure pocket passer who does not have enough athleticism to do damage anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Hurts is a solid, not elite quarterback, but solid will get you in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And Baker Mayfield has limitations in his game athletically as well, but he works with what he has, which Tampa Bay has been very smart to supply him with one of the nastiest wide receiver rooms in the National Football League year in and year out.
On Mayfield, too, by the way, and the article points this out, only Allen and Jackson have more touchdowns over the past 2 seasons than Mayfield. He has 73.
But you know that athletically there is this plateau that he has.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's never going to have the elite athletic traits that the top 4 do, for example. Maybe top 5 if I include Daniels in there.
Mm-hmm.
Mayfield does not have that. But what he does have is the gumption, the leadership, the IQ, and enough stones to make the throws that will challenge a defense, even if his arm is not as powerful.
He's somebody, though, I enjoy watching him play. I really do.
He does know when to rely on his talent.
Mm-hmm.
Because he learned that lesson the hard way.
I mean, yeah, we've talked about the ending Cleveland and arguably how unfair it was, but also I think Baker will tell you, too, he had to mature by the time he got to Tampa.
And he also thought he could play through a torn labrum in his non-throwing shoulder,
mm-hmm.
which is a terrible thing to try to play through. And because of that hard-headedness, that stubbornness, it cost him and Cleveland. Not just his season, but his career there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has to fight to get to where he is now all over again. Because if we do this list for 2021, heading into the 2021 season, Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson are all hanging around in this list.
Yep.
The rest of the names are probably different. Like, Stafford's there, but Herbert's not in pro yet. Goff has to re-wake up. Hurts isn't a pro yet. And Burrow is coming off of a knee injury.
After his rookie year. So, after even then, you may like him, but...
You may like him, but he's not a top 10 talent yet at that point. So some of the names around them are different, but the 2018 class would once again show its strength. Mm-hmm. Those three would be there in 21.
I just wonder, looking at this list, because you mentioned it too, like the moment we get to five, but even then, are these top four really that much better than everybody? And it does not feel like that, though.
It's not
it does.
It's not that it does, but at the same time, it's also not like it doesn't. They all have production that is terrifying. And if we dropped any one of them into the other conference...
They're the Mahomes of the NFC.
There would be a different conversation about any one of them.
Mm-hmm.
If you dropped any one of those four into the other conference.
Maybe you could argue against Lamar because of the playoff success. You can maybe argue against Lamar.
But you cannot argue what he does in season.
Right, right.
The team he is on, like say that the Ravens are in the NFC North, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably winning the division all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably not any different. And he's probably a threat every postseason. It is about being the threat, the consistent threat.
Because
the NFC had this for the longest time in Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And ultimately, he or the team, sometimes both, would collapse in the playoffs. Why does Aaron Rodgers only have one Super Bowl?
Only one Super Bowl appearance. It was due to later in his career really getting gun-shy, especially against the 49ers. And then early in his career, the defenses were horrendous.
Yeah. But at some point, Rodgers became part of the problem.
Oh, yeah. By the end of it, he became the problem.
And people do not like to admit that.
But by the end of it, he became a problem. He didn't want to take risks.
And, yeah, it's just one of those things of, like, maybe we should go ahead and acknowledge that these top four quarterbacks are really there. But it's also such a shame that every year only one of them is allowed to make a Super Bowl.
And, I mean, we've talked about it a lot. Like, outside of the Burrow one year, it's been Mahomes that has sucked up a lot of the oxygen.
And that's why Jaden Daniels in the top five makes so much sense to me, because the NFC is dying for that uber-talented type quarterback.
Mm-hmm. And it's not Hurts. Hurts won a Super Bowl. I think his placement is probably
Hurts,
correct
because
at nine.
Of his team,
yeah,
is always going to be the premier threat. But he is not the premier threat. He's a solid quarterback who gets a lot of touchdowns rushing because Philadelphia can't punch the ball in.
Yeah, at the one-yard line, though, let's just give it to Jalen.
Why is it that he has so many rushing touchdowns on tush pushes? Better question I should be asking is, why aren't you able to punch it in anyway?
It's just for
why does
it
keep getting to the one-yard line, guys?
For me, with Hurts, it's much more when you have players like Devonta Smith, A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert, and Saquon Barkley in your passing game, we shouldn't get to a point where 5-6 games last year, he's under 200 yards passing. That should be an offense that was never touched by anybody. And yet to end the season against the Rams, 179 yards passing, 118 against Baltimore, 108 against Carolina.
It's also because
those three are all wins.
But it's also because they didn't need him. You mentioned that Rams game. Saquon Barkley went nuts.
Yeah, he goes for like 200 yards. But it's still, for me, it's one of those... I don't like this reasoning, but maybe the team is too talented for Hurts to get full credit. But we've also seen enough from Hurts where we know he's a big-time gamer. In big moments, he can make big throws. He throws a beautiful deep pass.
You know what it is?
But he's not going to be the main show.
It makes sense that he's right near Mayfield, though. Physically, there are limitations.
Mm-hmm.
As a passer, his arm, it's not the greatest of arms. But it's still good enough to be a top 10 quarterback in the league. He has an overall skill set.
He has a Russell Wilson-like deep ball.
Yes, but it's never all that consistent. Mayfield, he has physical limitations. That's why he and Hurts are pretty much birds of a feather.
Mm-hmm.
Would Mayfield on the Eagles be the same successful team? Yes and no. They wouldn't have the tush push because Hurts
right,
squats
right.
like a house.
Too much. Yeah, he sweats too much, arguably.
And Mayfield does not have the frame for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they would never have tried it. But he would have Smith, he would have Brown, he'd have Goddard, which is relatively the same amount of success he's had. The difference is that there's been a lot of variance between Philly's defense and Tampa's defense.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number two call. We're going to continue on with these quarterback conversations. How do you feel? Josh Allen coming in at two behind Patrick Mahomes, or even Lamar Jackson coming in at fourth after some historic seasons by him, Joe Burrow in three, and then Mahomes, of course, number one. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
The people I've talked to around the league firmly believe that Joe Burrow is playing the quarterback position the best, but he's not the most feared. Those other quarterbacks we're talking about, their fear factor is thick when you go against coordinators. How are we going to stop them, not only with their arm, with their mobility? Burrow doesn't quite have that, but when we're talking about decision-making, accuracy, eye level, people around the league believe that Burrow is the very best at that. Look, are they wasting his talent in Cincinnati? I don't know if they're quite there yet, but the pipes are bursting a little bit. They're always putting out leaks or holes in Cincinnati, whether it's the O-line or the bad defense, but they have a quarterback that can win it all for them and win an MVP. He looks primed for it.
There is Jeremy Fowler. We've been talking about his top 10 list the last few weeks, and today was the quarterback list. Top 10, Patrick Mahomes comes in at one, Josh Allen number two, Lamar Jackson at four, while Joe Burrow, who was kind of the main character of that clip, comes in at three, as he doesn't possess the fear factor that the top two do. I am surprised, Derek, Lamar Jackson also doesn't come into that. Because to be fair, as Fowler put it, it's how do we stop these guys on a day-to-day basis? Lamar absolutely should be on that list of how the hell are we supposed to do this?
Yes, but the Bills in one half of football kind of gave that blueprint.
Sure.
Sell out, force Lamar to make a mistake, and know that he can't come back from it.
Problem is, like, a lot of those mistakes just come in the playoffs. Like, it's not a regular season thing for him.
That's the weirdest thing about him.
He's not somebody that turns the ball over all that much until the end of the season.
And that it's almost unexplainable how it happens. Like, and he's not alone in this. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at a different sport for a team right nearby us up north and go, why does this keep happening to you?
But you see it. I mean, it is a thing.
Like, the highest paid player in the National Hockey League has one goal
mm-hmm.
in the second round of the playoffs in his entire career.
Clayton Kershaw, Dodgers pitcher, for years,
was
known as the best regular season pitcher.
The choker.
You do not want to play him in the playoffs. Being the Dodgers, you do not want to play him in the playoffs.
You want
to finish a series before.
You don't want him pitching.
Yeah.
Unless you have games in hand.
And he was inarguably the best pitcher for like a 5-year run.
Like, I don't understand how it happens to players. What I do understand is that teams see it.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I don't know if it's respected, but sometimes might even weigh too much into it.
I was going to say, especially for these four. Yeah.
Which is probably how a 2-time MVP gets to that point.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we rank him at four. There's a fear factor with Allen in the postseason where if he goes fire god mode, train has left the station and we're all just running trying to catch it.
And really, even right or wrong,
and
the
only,
feeling is only his team can stop him.
And there's only one team that has slowed him down
mm-hmm.
in that venture. And when I say slowed down, I do mean that in the exact words. They don't fully stop him, but Allen's impacts can get slowed down at times against the Kansas City Chiefs. The last play of the Bills season.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Josh Allen has a great blitz called against him. He does everything setting the protection the proper way, but the Chiefs sent more men than the Bills had blocking. He's hot. You got to get rid of that thing, but there's no clear hot route being won.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go ahead and look at it and go, he's, and that's why it's Allen's at two. as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
if he's able to beat everybody, including the Chiefs,
he probably is at one.
He's probably at one.
Like, it's the thing. Like, let's say the Super Bowl goes the same way for the AFC team. It's just the Bills instead of the Chiefs.
Allen probably gets his flowers.
He probably gets the one spot.
And that's also the other reason that I think Burrow's at three. Fowler mentions how the Bengals are ruining him, and it's potentially getting to that narrative.
Yeah.
How much run has Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals received? And Burrow, in particular, thanks to the last couple of years, because they made a Super Bowl and have since collapsed their team.
I look at that. I love that we were able to play that clip, because for me, it just... It got in my head where, because I think you brought up, like, maybe we're looking too much into playoff success or, mm-hmm. or playoff failures. But we've kind of gotten there with these four where it's like, we know what they do in the regular season, right? They're all going to get their MVP awards. Burrow will probably get one by the end of his career,
I'd imagine. What separates all of them at this point?
It becomes playoffs. Now, I think ultimately, Burrow is almost saved. Saved. It's a random list in the offseason. But he gets third. Because Lamar doesn't have the great playoff performances.
As a matter of fact, sometimes he's bad.
And Burrow, like you mentioned, did get to a Super Bowl. Of those four, it's only him and Mahomes that have gotten there.
And it is not on his performance and on his back that he gets to a Super Bowl. Cincinnati's defense is unreal.
But he definitely doesn't cost them the game.
He almost cost them against the Tennessee Titans, where he gets sacked 9 times. Sometimes, mm-hmm. when you get mm-hmm. sacked 9 times, eventually some of the onus is on you.
Some of the onus is on you. But he wins.
But he wins.
So everyone kind of will forget about it eventually.
And this is the part that I know is exactly where it's not measured fair and balanced, and why 1 through 4 should be an assortment of orders based on where you're from. Wins are still, even in the playoffs, mm-hmm. not a quarterback stat. Patrick Mahomes, over the last 2 postseasons, outside of when he faces Buffalo, so now it's a Bills problem more than anything, but when he doesn't face Buffalo in the postseason, it is the team that wins the game. It is not him. It is not the offense, even in particular.
Mm-hmm.
It is strong defensive showings by Steve Spagnuolo's unit. But then they face Buffalo, and everything goes off the haywire. And whether it's AJ Klein having to chase Travis Kelce, or
I mean,
I can't even explain
last year.
I can't even explain last year at this point.
Well, not start, but eventually take over.
Yes, but. Why is it always something with the Bills' defense? Allen oftentimes has had to, through a collaborative effort, there are games where he doesn't have to take over, but there are now games that in the postseason people remember.
Mm-hmm.
The 2022 postseason, chief amongst them. Those 2 games where he is unreal against the Patriots and the Chiefs. You know how Burrow gets a lot of credit for making a Super Bowl? Allen has now gotten just as much credit through his performances consistently in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
where ultimately his team does let him down. But why is Mahomes over Allen at one? Well, in the games that they have to face each other in the playoffs, it is shot for shot.
Yeah, Mahomes and Allen play their best football.
They go shot for shot at that point. And when you go shot for shot, whoever wins is the one that you're favoring
mm-hmm.
in a ranking. Why? It's simple logic. That's why.
Yeah. I'll also say, too, Allen, and maybe this is also a big part of him, too, in the opposite vein for Lamar. Lamar has typically turned the ball over more in the playoffs. Allen, we know, has been punished by people for turning the ball over too much.
Mm-hmm.
But in 4 of the 6 postseasons he's been in, he hasn't thrown an interception, including the last 2.
Which is wild.
And so there maybe is that feeling for Allen of he plays his best football January on, where Lamar plays his best football September to December.
And welcome to the difference between number 2.
Yeah, and number 4. I just, with Burrow, though, Fowler brought up that idea that people are believing that they're wasting Burrow. I think we've maybe gotten to that point. And the reason why I want to bring this up, too, is because it's something that has definitely been brought up with Bills fans. The feeling of, and I've even mentioned it, too, I can fully understand when people are kind of done with McDermott. This is going to be, what, year 9 now? Like, are we going to give him all of Allen's prime? I can understand that feeling of, like, are we really going to do that? You look at Burrow, though. He hasn't made the playoffs in the last 2 years. Allen has made the playoffs every year since ascending, even before he ascended in 2019.
He has made the playoffs every year outside of his rookie year.
Outside of his rookie year, where Burrow now has made the playoffs twice. He's going into year six. And so that to me is where we get into the conversation of wasting.
Yes.
Of having that elite quarterback talent. It's inarguable. Burrow is one of the best quarterbacks of his generation. And this is where, and I wanted to almost catch myself, but I'm glad we kind of waited now until say it. I said, I think Burrow might win an MVP. Like, I just think that'll happen. They'll eventually give him one. But I think the quarterback he's maybe most comparable to now didn't win one. Not as famously so as I think Russell Wilson, but Drew Brees did not win one. For all of his gaudy stats and everything like that, he often finished second to Aaron Rodgers and stuff like that.
He would often, not often, but he would also sometimes miss the playoffs.
Well, and that, for me, almost became famously so, that his teams would be horrendous on defense. Derek, so they win the Super Bowl in 2009. Famous. Brees was awesome that year. Incredibly accurate. 34 touchdowns. 70 completion percentage.
Storybook season for the Saints.
Yep. They go then to the playoffs the next 2 years, although in 2010 they lose to a under 500 record Seattle Seahawks team.
Who hosted a playoff game.
Yep. Then go 13-3 in 2011. And then the next year, 7-9. Then go 11-5 in 2013. And then for the next 3 years, they don't make the playoffs in Brees' mid-30s. 7-9, 7-8, 7-9 are his records with those teams. And then you have the 2 years where the Saints are arguably the most talented team in football, but Brees is at the end of his rope. They get the bad call against the Rams, and then his career kind of fizzles out. 2019, he only plays 11 games, 8-3, and then 2020 plays 12 games, 9-3, but his ability has clearly diminished. He's still accurate, but his ability is clearly diminished. He also missed the playoffs early in his career with the Saints. They make the NFC Championship game, if you remember, in 2006, his first year there. Mm-hmm. It's post-Katrina. There's a lot of vibe there. They go 10-6. They make the NFC Championship. They miss the playoffs the next 2 years at 7-9 and 8-8.
Yeah. Man, that is such a wild career.
Like, inarguably, he's the best Saints player ever. And they had a really good run with him. And for how many years he was there, you are going to miss the playoffs. Teams turn over. Talent doesn't work out, what have you. But Burrow already in his early career, and he was a guy that came in older. He was 24 when he came in and has already picked up some major injuries. He's somebody I do look at and wonder.
He also has a buzzsaw of a division.
He does.
There is a bit of a, and this is why like him getting to three is a little bit more fascinating, but when it comes to pure talent, the top four should be an assortment and collection of.
Of that group. I agree. But he Burrow is also somebody I now look at and go, how many more years do we have of him? You can say that negatively or positively, especially if you're a Bills fan. But I also look at somebody like an Andrew Luck, who was on a horrendously run Colts team. Now, he took a beating. And that's the thing. He had some injuries where he had to go to Europe to like get them diagnosed and to figure out the treatment, the whole thing.
It took him 2 years to be fixed to play one season. And then he said, no, this isn't worth it anymore.
But Burrow has also gone through hell. I've mentioned he's picked up some injuries here. I mean, hell, the one season.
Three major ones.
Yeah, 2023, when they also don't make the playoffs, they do finish, I think, with the same record, 9-8. I think it's the same record both ways, and Jake Browning plays pretty well. But Burrow himself is 5-5 in that run. They weren't clearly going to make it with him
there. It
was
a different 5-5, though, because he starts that season with a calf injury.
Yes.
He's not as mobile. He doesn't get to manipulate the pocket. He's more or less a true statue.
Mm-hmm. He has suffered a major knee injury. He has the whole wrist thing going on, which is still kind of unknown what that's going to mean for him later on in his career. He has picked up some, and you mentioned the statue too. He was ranked as a dual threat quarterback coming out of high school, going to Ohio State initially. He was somebody that had wheels, tore up his knee in his rookie year.
And he still has them, because I do mention, like, it's a very clear hierarchy between the four of them of mobility. Jackson, Allen, Mahomes, Burrow. And it's all noticeable gaps between the four of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's a noticeable gap between one and two, a noticeable gap between Allen and Mahomes on the rushing ability, not pocket escapability, but rushing ability. That's what separates the two of them. And then between Mahomes and Burrow, it's very distant there as well.
Yes.
So that's where it's like, Burrow still is a mobile-esque quarterback, but compared to those three, he's a statue.
Mm-hmm.
That's the weird thing.
That's the weird thing. 803-0550, the number two call. Before we hit our next timeout, I want to remind you, Friday Foursome with Encore Golf is back, ready to tee up for free. Every Friday, we're giving away a foursome at one of our favorite nearby fairways, Seneca Hickory Stick Golf Course, Diamond Hawk Golf Course, or Royal Niagara Golf Club, plus a box of Encore Golf balls, a $25 Encore gift card. Enter now through August 21st at WGR550.com for your shot at the pin. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, this is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up hour number one. We'll be with you until 12 o'clock as Sabres Live will take over then. But tomorrow, rookies report for the Buffalo Bills and a bevy of other teams, but maybe the biggest storyline for tomorrow, for a lot of teams, and really the league at large, is what is going to be happening with 30 of the 32 second-round picks in this year's draft. As we do know, most of them have been unsigned, 30 of them. And with the Chargers reporting, rookies reporting this weekend, we do know their second-round pick, wide receiver Trey Harris out of Ole Miss, is holding out. TJ Sanders, up there for the Bills, has still not obviously signed his contract. The only two are actually a wide receiver for the Houston Texans. Jaden Higgins got a fully guaranteed deal. And then the next day, Cleveland did the same thing for their linebacker, Carson Schwechter out of UCLA. Those are the only two that are signed. They have fully guaranteed deals. That appears to be what the other 30 are waiting for.
And that's a fascinating thing because there is the report from Pablo Torre and the investigation that he's been going in on about the NFL potentially colluding on trying to give less guaranteed money these days. Especially if it's a thing that has not been historically something that second-round picks receive, you're now getting a little bit of a disagreement between general managers operating the way that they are.
Mm-hmm.
But with 30 out of 32 unsigned, the only piece of this I'm going to say is it leans toward more credibility toward Torre's report when there are 30 of 32 second-round picks not signed and guaranteed money is potentially one of the biggest cruxes going on in terms of these negotiations.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number two call. Do you want to touch back on that quarterback list we were talking about? There's also one done by SB Nation talking about the top 30 all-time in the Super Bowl era. Two Bills quarterbacks wind up there. We've been talking a lot about one today. We'll touch on the other one as well after this quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Out of that group of four, the top four, he was fourth last year in the league when it comes to just watching them play. The gap has never been this ridiculously big gap when it comes to Patrick, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow. All three of those guys had better seasons last year than Patrick did, yes. But there is the reality that Patrick, not once, not twice, but three or four times, has played his absolute best when it's been needed the most. Those other three guys haven't necessarily done that.
ESPN's Dan Orlovsky talking about the ESPN top 10 QB list. You knew this one was going to get a lot of leg room for that.
It's going to get a lot of legs because also it's right before everyone starts showing up for camp. It's the last vestige of ESPN shows being able to yell at each other for rankings.
Oh, they can find time to do that in August.
You're right, actually.
They can find time. This is the last, like, honest one.
Yes.
But after that, like a random Tuesday or Wednesday in August?
That's true.
Yeah,
it'll be a
baby
list that they just come up with of like.
Exactly. And all the power to them.
Where would LeBron James rank in terms of quarterbacks?
To be fair, on the quarterback rankings today.
Probably five because they're starving for it.
Yes. But we watched it today before we jumped on. They were talking about SEC Media Day. And they were also talking about a quarterback list there.
Yes.
A kind of fake one, but it was more just like they were throwing it up there. Of like, well, who would be the top SEC quarterback? Arch Manning or name a bunch of other guys here.
And
I also, by the way, as a Texas fan, would not rank Arch number one. I'm not that crazy.
I do believe it was Jordan Rodgers that said that on ESPN.
He's not even top five.
He's not even top five in the SEC.
Which, and it's that, like, feels insane.
Yeah, maybe he was right about the hype train's too high.
Yeah.
But then he went back on it and went contrarian,
mm-hmm.
like an overcorrection. And it's like, no, it's okay. One, both of these things can be true, where he's the overhype is real, but also not,
mm-hmm.
Like he's just not the top guy. The other part of it is an overcorrection where, no, that doesn't mean that he's not a top five quarterback within the conference.
I just think it's ridiculous. I know he played predominantly against poor competition. You could not have watched him and been like, it's a little overrated. He's going to be amazing. He just may not be the best quarterback in the SEC right now because guys like Garrett Nussmeier at LSU and Lenore Sellers at South Carolina have already started a ton of games and are already awesome. Sellers is my dark horse pick to win the Heisman. I know someone on ESPN said that too. Maybe even was Dan Orlovsky, who we just heard from. I like him a lot. He gives off that vibe, not the exact size. He's not 6'5", 240 like Cam Newton, but he gives off the vibe like Cam Newton at Auburn of a guy that just kind of changes the trajectory of a program. What Shane Beamer has been able to do at South Carolina, they even got a stud edge rusher in Dylan Stewart coming into his sophomore year. Hell, the Bills have taken advantage of a bit of the rise of South Carolina in drafting TJ Sanders. I think Sellers is going to be unbelievable. Maybe, I don't know about necessarily winning the SEC, but also I think the days of dynasties in the SEC and undefeated seasons might be over with because of NIL.
And that's the good thing about NIL.
Is that The big dogs are still going to eat first. And as a mid-major town with Buffalo, you're still going to get picked apart. But it will allow teams like South Carolina, who, while have been in the SEC, have very much been the second fiddle, they'll be able to rise a little
bit
here.
That's the downside, though, of the NIL, is that the big teams are going to eat first and foremost.
Yeah.
But when it comes to a power conference, like, that's the problem with NIL, I think, is you're never going to have that outside chance. But rarely often did you get it before that anyway.
Yeah,
like
it doesn't
your random
much.
Kentucky or Vanderbilt mm-hmm. seasons
mm-hmm.
or your
I year didn't where, say the years where Stanford was good in football.
Yeah, the years where those things happen. Me, a Purdue supporter,
mm-hmm.
I'm never going to see the Boilermakers become a contender in the Big Ten ever again in my life.
No.
Like, not in football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a basketball state. It's a basketball school. It all makes sense. They'll randomly need to be good one year in order to like ride the momentum.
Indiana last year.
But even then, they might struggle now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's still only Indiana University. And in football, that doesn't carry the weight that it does on the court.
Especially, you know, Indiana.
Yeah.
I'm going to Notre Dame first.
Yes, exactly. Like, you're not even the best... You're not even the best football team in your state, let alone your conference.
Yeah. I mean, it's
most prestigious, not even close. You're not even in the same atmosphere as the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. As much as I hate them, you have to understand that the brand alone is indomitable. Why the likes of Purdue still has a rivalry game with them?
Oh, some of those Big Ten rivalry games are ridiculous.
The battle for the Shillelagh?
Yeah. I know Notre Dame's not a Big Ten, but they're in that territory.
They've lost the last nine.
They have some of the ridiculous rivalries, too.
Purdue has lost the last nine in that rivalry game, okay? It's kind of becoming a farce.
Yeah. Last thing on this that I do want to say. It's one of those where the brands have been around for so long. Nothing the sport did outside of straight up stripping them of scholarships to equal out mid-major teams would put everyone else on an equal footing. Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama.
And that would be best for business.
Exactly. You know, the big programs, I've mentioned this with college basketball a lot, and maybe I'm a bit too much of a ratings junkie now, but I don't really care. It paints the best picture of what, you know, people want to see. And people want to see the big brands. They want to see them in the big games. They want to see coach legacies on the line, what's going to happen here. You're going to get that in NIL. You may not get as deep of teams. Now, if we're going to start doing rankings in 10, 15 years of the best teams of all time, most of these teams that win in the next 10, 15 years probably won't be on them. Their teams are simply not deep enough. They are losing backups to other SEC and Big Ten teams who are willing to pony out the purse and really go after this, the checkbook. But you're still going to have great teams. It just, however, will be a lot of the brands that you already know and love and or hate. But I won't be against, Notre Dame coming back. I haven't really seen a great Notre Dame team all but a few years in my life. And I like Marcus Freeman a lot. USC hasn't been legitimately relevant, long-standing, more than just a year where they go 11-2 and go to a Rose Bowl, since the early 2000s. As a Texas fan, the same thing. The last time they were really relevant was 09 up until the last few years. You know, I'm okay with those big brands coming back because we all like watching them.
But the big brands not being dynasties is also the other thing about it that makes it better, because they are still brand names, but they're not dominating year in and year out and year in and year out.
We're not going to get the Nick Saban Alabama run.
Never again. And honestly, thank goodness for that.
Because it felt like Georgia was going to do that.
Georgia was on the cusp of starting to do that, actually. Like, Kirby Smart has built a great program there, but now...
A lot of legal issues, but yeah.
Yeah. That's sometimes...
A lot of legal issues.
You sacrifice the...
Yeah.
You sacrifice the character for the talent. And that's what you get. But it's probably the mix of, like, it's perfect for both worlds, but there is a clear loser in this. It's all mid-majors, and it's all lower-tier brands of big programs. They're never going to be the same again.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are going to just forever stay the same.
Yeah.
They're never going to have that flash in the pan anymore. Mid-majors are a different story because you can at least secure a brand of, we are the school that gets you to your school.
Which
is a great way to go about it.
Yeah.
We're the school that gets you to the school.
Because it's going to be one of those, like, let's be honest, UB, Ohio, any of the MAC schools are not competing for a national championship.
Correct.
It would take a generational run to compete in something, say, like the Cotton Bowl or the Rose Bowl or Fiesta Bowl, anything like that.
And college football rosters are too big to make that the case, where, like, you have this roster of players that suddenly is able to compete with the big wigs of college football for an entire season.
Teams like Boise State took advantage at the right time and even still got a little screwed over.
Still, even like if you go unbeaten in the MAC, things still have to fall properly in place for you to make it into the top 12 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There's no automatic bid for you. It may be looked at as, oh, you just play in the MAC.
Now, I mean, you had runs like that, like Western Michigan with P.J. Fleck. They were a highly rated team that I think they did go to the Cotton Bowl. They got blown out. Ball State, when they lost to UB in 08, they were undefeated, ranked 12th in the country. Now, nowadays, especially if we go to 16-team playoff, they're in.
They're in if you get to 16. But as of right now, there will be arguments made against you.
Mm-hmm.
And the College Football Playoff Committee will look at this and go, is this bad business? What if we put a MAC school in here that, yeah, they went 12-0. What if I put them in there?
No one watches.
And they get the teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
Like, what happens then? Then we never do this again.
You saw it last year, too. Penn State SMU. Yes. Blowout. SMU's a good team. And also, and I hate bringing this up, but I think it's worth mentioning, the MAC plays their MAC championship in Indianapolis. It's not a highly sold out game. Now, to be fair, a lot of these conference championships are not. I mean, the Big 12 is also famously one of them, when last year was Iowa State and Arizona State. And in Arlington, Texas, in the Dallas Cowboys Stadium, there was room. People could come in.
It was the Cowboys Stadium, though, too. Let's not make it.
But that also is where people do look at, like, yeah, what is the brand size? How many people actually tune in to watch this? Boise State has built up over now almost three decades. They've been building up their brand of multiple big, you know, wins, dominating the WAC and then eventually the Mountain West, to where now people just know Boise State. You know them as the mid-major program
in
college football.
They are a brand.
They're the Gonzaga of college football.
But they are also a brand that was established well before the NIL was even a threat to be a thing.
Yeah.
Them and TCU are the teams that you immediately thought of the mid-major types.
I'm glad
that you can – they can hang.
Yeah.
These guys can hang. They've shown it historically that they could do it. And for Boise State to make its return, it's not a coincidence that this new day and age of college football is here, and Boise State suddenly is back on the map.
A part of it. TCU got the bump. They left. I think they were in the Mountain West first, and then they jump, or the WAC. One of those two.
Correct.
They do get the jump, though, to the Big 12. They join the big dogs. You know, UCF has kind of done the same thing. They've now joined the Big 12. Boise State got screwed over by the Pac-12. Boise State absolutely should have become a member of that group.
Teams were scared of them.
And for whatever happened, it was teams, I think, both scared of them, but also kind of the feeling of, is the market of Boise, Idaho really going to do anything for us? Well, number one, you look at Utah, it's just going to build up the conference's brand. But Boise, and that's where I said Boise got screwed over. If they had gone to the Pac-12, number one, most of us aren't even talking about them as like a darling. They would be part of the Power 4, Power 5. like TCU was when they made a national championship. They'd been in the Big 12 for years, and even then they got blown out. It's one of the worst national championship games of all time. Boise, you know, makes it last year. They give Penn State a hell of a run. They almost have a Heisman Trophy winner.
Right.
Which, if you would have said that even 10 years ago, would have felt absurd. Now it's just kind of like, it's Boise State, baby. Like, it's what they do.
It's what they do. And that's the part of it, like, with college football that I'm – that's the part I'm okay with.
Mm-hmm.
Is you have established yourself through years of fighting through the system. Honestly, like, Boise State and TCU, they had an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm.
TCU joins a power conference. Boise State, despite not having one of those in their pocket, they are still a brand name and still a spectacle for players to want to get to in Boise, Idaho. Not what I would call a destination city.
Yeah, now they're going to be one of the main members of the revitalized Pac-12.
And that's going to be a good deal. When the Pac-12 is able to get its stuff together all over again here, it's going to help them majorly.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it's criminal that the Atlantic Coastal Conference has Stanford and Cal in it.
Yeah, you wonder how long that lasts if all of a sudden the Pac-12 comes back.
If the Pac-12 comes back, I'd expect those teams to jump right back over there, because then you would be able to stay within Power 5 conference sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you get to cut back down on your traveling costs.
And it's not like the ACC is, well, the Big Ten or the SEC, where you're like, oh, we have to stay.
Yeah.
Look at all the talent. It's not. It's Clemson, a few years Florida State,
but
and that's kind of about it.
But it's also a conference that you can take if you have a good year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the part of, like, we talk about the struggles of the mid-majors.
Mm-hmm.
Or the bottom-tier brands in a Power 5 conference.
Yep.
The ACC does not have that problem.
No.
I could look at any one of them, except for, like, I don't know, Wake Forest.
Well, they had a few years, actually.
But
Sam Hartman years.
The Sam Hartman years. Good Lord. But do I consider them a threat, though, to get an automatic bid for a playoff?
Not really, no.
No. But all it takes with the ACC is one good year. In the Big Ten, you got to deal with SC, Oregon, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State. I need to clear all five of these hurdles just to have a chance to make it to the conference championship game.
And we're all likelihood I'm going to get blown out by the one I didn't play yet.
Yes.
Realistically.
It is. Who's the buzzsaw I didn't meet? Because that's the one that's going to chop this season in half.
Yeah. Penn State ultimately has a great season last year, but they lose to Oregon in the Big Ten championship. Or Ohio State doesn't even win the damn thing. They don't even make the game.
They don't even make the game, and yet
they walk to the national championship.
Oh, my God. That was still – and that, like, the Big Ten has become such a buzzsaw
mm-hmm.
for itself. Like, Ohio State has one bad day against Michigan where they decide to try to play bully ball with the bullies of the Big Ten when it comes to, we are defensively sound, run the football. Oh, you want to try to beat us at our game? You're really going to try that with us?
It's just so ridiculous.
Okay.
So ridiculous.
I'm not going to stop my enemy from making a mistake.
Yeah, we can't play quarterback, but you're going to also force yourself to run the ball.
And that's where it's such a weird story of, you did not even get to appear in your conference championship game, let alone get dusted in it. And yet you still got the easiest path somehow to the college football championship.
Where I'm glad they fixed up the seedings to make that not like that.
That's good.
But it also was and that I think might be a thing that starts to happen more and more. It was still very weird, for as dominant as Ohio State was, for them to not be the Big Ten champions and national champions.
Mm-hmm.
That always used to go hand in hand. You had to win your conference, and then you could
but
get
you know
a
who's
shot
the first
to
team
win
that broke
champion.
That?
Hmm.
Ohio State.
Which year was it? It wasn't this past year.
It wasn't the fact that they, like, oddly enough, they were the benefactors of that argument first.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't remember the year, but it was back when it was it was the Lloyd Carr Wolverines against Trestle's Ohio State
mm-hmm.
in their later years of coaching, where they play the best game of the year against each other in the game. But Michigan loses, and their pitch for the BCS championship is, we played the best against Ohio State. This should be our time. And the ruling initially was you have to win your conference in order to make it to the national championship game.
Hell yeah.
And then Ohio State becomes the beneficiary of this and falls at the hands of LSU.
Is that 2006? No, that's when they lose to Florida. Oh, 2007. There we go. Yeah. Because, well, no, Ohio State is the Big Ten champion. Yeah, oh, okay. So then, yeah, so they get the championship.
I don't know if it's that year then, but, oh, it was Alabama that stopped that from happening, not Ohio State. Alabama was the one that they had a rematch in a championship game because.
Against LSU, which was one of the worst. So bad. That's like 21-0. It was awful.
But hey, they were seen as the best team. But wait, didn't they not win their conference? Isn't that what you guys always stood on business about?
Yep, 2011, Alabama, consensus national champion, 21-0 win over LSU. LSU, though, is the SEC champion after they beat Georgia 42-10 and also beat Alabama early in the year in another awful game, 9-6 overtime win. Just an awful game.
Yeah, so it was one of these weird things of like, you had that, you were standing on business for that, and then all of a sudden you chose to depart from that.
Mm-hmm. Alabama. Always getting it.
Always the favorite child all of a sudden in the 2000s.
803-0550, the number two call. I do like this era, though, college football. Again, I'm excited for UB this year. I've kind of spoken on that a lot.
We are looking at a potentially, hopefully, nasty year in the MAC with Pete Lembo at the helm.
They're only, I know through BetMGM, they're second only to Toledo in terms of odds to win the MAC championship.
Which makes sense.
And that's unknown at quarterback play. So we'll see how that goes. I like the era of college football we're in. I don't love it because I do want there to be some safety bars. I'm not saying you need a full salary cap, but it can't be the Wild West out there. But college football's always kind of went through this run of things.
You know what kind of made it a really easy, like, here's a pitch for like how to fix it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You brought it up within the college football game, the video game.
Mm-hmm.
If you limit the transfer portal, then you don't lose your entire roster if you're playing as a mid-major, right?
Yeah, it's tough to be like, hey, beat your guys out, you know, your teammates to get to like the 15 or 20 guys that can leave, whatever it is. Like that's going to make it weird. I don't want to go back to the days where you have to sit out a year because coaches don't have to sit out if they leave a job to go to another one. I don't want that. It might be one of those you're going to have to limit how many transfers you can bring in.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of these kids do enter the portal with the knowledge that one or two teams, I'm going to be on one of these two teams.
And there are kids that are entering the transfer portal, for example, following a coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you want to be there because this guy recruited you. He believed in you. You don't want to try to risk it, like, you know, the devil you do versus the devil you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you get a new boss, for example, it might be a little uncomfortable. Do you just follow the old guy that you know that that helped lead you to being kind of relatively a success?
Mm-hmm.
So there are reasons like that as well. Oh, he's going to a different program. I'm probably going to want to go with him because I'm familiar with that system.
Mm-hmm.
And schematic fits as well.
Yeah.
So there are reasons like that. But I do think there should be a little bit of a competition for, okay, who's leaving the mid-major for the big league?
On that, Brian Koziel just texted into me too. You know, I think we've all kind of been there as UB fans, wanted to see UB jump from the MAC, leave the MAC. There were reports last week Ohio was maybe looking to leave. I think they squashed those reports, but when there's smoke, there's fire, especially with conference realignment. I always believe most of it.
Always believe in the chaos of conference realignment these days.
Big Ten makes sense most geographically. Brian mentioned that, but that's too big of a jump. I also don't think you have the infrastructure. You'd need a big stadium.
Not only the infrastructure, you don't have the talent to last. Yeah,
not even close.
I just talked about the plights of Purdue.
Yeah. I will say, though, and this is a conference I pushed for a while, and that is the American. They are likely going to be losing some teams to the Big 12 or the ACC, Tulane, and they will be looking for someone else. If you're at your best, and that's what Ohio's doing. They just won the MAC championship in dominant fashion. I think they just lost their coach as well. So for UB, and conference realignment will come fast because you'll also have leagues like the Big Ten who will be looking at Rutgers going, what are you offering us? What are you genuinely offering us?
And at least Purdue can answer, Basketball.
Basketball. Exactly.
Indiana, up until last year, the same answer. Basketball.
Basketball.
I could offer you basketball.
Northwestern, GPA for the conference. It's the same with Vanderbilt and the SEC. I don't care if it's wrong.
Purdue answers exactly that as what it well. Is. But you have answers. Mm-hmm. What is Rutgers giving me as a conference?
Mm-hmm. So I don't even think it's the New York market. I know that was a big reason why they were brought in initially, but their football program feels so dead. I don't even think you're getting that.
Yeah.
And so I wonder where it goes. I like the American, though. And that was the thing I loved, you know, back when the basketball program was as good as it was. 803-0550, the number two call. Well, let's go a little late. We'll go to Allie up here first. Allie, how are we doing today?
I'm great. How are you, fellas?
Doing well.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's super funny you guys were talking about this. Just like off-season talk, my dad and I were debating kind of what you guys were discussing. I'm from Wyoming originally and obviously became a Bills fan and follow you guys and all that now because of Josh. But, you know, we were just talking about the kind of impact that NIL has had on, you know, schools like Wyoming. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Boise, they've been beating us up for a while now, and San Diego as well. But, you know, it's interesting. We get dudes that come and they pop off and they play great. And, you know, our scouts at UW are the ones that are, you know, finding the talent and giving them chances. And then they come and they play for a year and they ball out. And then, you know, we just get bought out. We're the only university in the state. So it's like a huge part of the community. And very much a big part of like who we are as a state, but, it's so challenging. And so we were kind of talking about like what safeguards do schools like that have where, you know, you spend all this time scouting these dudes and bring them in and they're great, but then, you know, getting bought out, to, you know, to go to maybe a little bit of a more exciting place. Laramie, Wyoming, isn't that good? I mean, I went to school there and loved it, but, you know, it's not as exciting as those bigger schools. And so, I don't know. I'm not sure what the solution is, but that's kind of the great debate around Wyoming football is like, you know, if NIL had been in place, like, would we have kept Josh? And I would like to think that the person that he is, you know what I mean, the kind of man that he is, he would have stayed because Bull gave him a chance. And, you know, we all know the story, but I don't know. It's interesting being someone who's a lifelong fan, and my dad played for Wyoming, and I went there, and just watching what that's done to our program as well. The debate just is super interesting. So I was just curious. I guess it's interesting to hear you guys' thoughts, and that's something we're talking about out here as well.
Yeah, Allie, thanks for the call. I want to jump more into this. I even love she brought up the idea of NIL was there, would Josh leave? And that's something I thought of in his second year.
Yeah.
Of. Maybe would he have wanted to jump to a bigger program? We got to take a quick time out here. I want to jump into that, though, after this. Derek, though, before we do that,
I want to make sure to remind everyone to celebrate 716 Day with Jeremy White at the BFLO Store's flagship location in the Transitown Plaza, Williamsville, on Wednesday, July 16th from 4 to 6 p.m. Spend $77.16 in-store or online, and you can score a free Go Bills cap while supplies last. Meet Bills and Bandits players, catch live music, exclusive getaways, shop the brand new tailgate collection. Don't miss it. And that is in just a couple days on Wednesday. Full details at BFLOshop.com, the BFLO store, official retailer of the Buffalo Bills. Derek and Zach here on the Extra Point Show. We'll be right back after this break.
Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres Foundations will be hosting Give 716 Day, raising as much money for local charities as possible, beginning at 7:16 p.m. tomorrow evening. That is Tuesday, July 15th, and running to 11:59 p.m. midnight, Wednesday, July 16th. Over 500 charities are participating. All fans are encouraged to make a donation of any amount to their favorite charities. Go to give716.org between 7:16 p.m. Tuesday, July 15th, and midnight on Wednesday, July 16th. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're talking a lot about college football today, SEC Media Days today, and we just kind of got in the running of talking NIL. We took Allie's call there in the last segment. And
we promised an answer.
And, you know, I think it has been a perfect marriage between Josh Allen coming from Laramie, Wyoming, and even small town Fireball, California, to Buffalo. Obviously, the small market, you know, that's sort of ingrained in all of us, and that kind of pride that it brings. But that's where the NIL era can be scary as hell. You're talking about Laramie, Wyoming, a UB program that has at times really struggled to gain fan interest, especially in an NFL market. This is a scary era where you're wondering, is every good player we have going to leave? Allie brings up Josh Allen. NIL wasn't a problem in 2018. If it was, does he jump to one of the Pac-12 big boys, Oregon, USC, something like that? And then, you know, for us personally, UB fans, what if it was around when Khalil Mack was getting drafted?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have Mack for that final year where you have some iconic moments? I mean, they get blown up by Ohio State, but my goodness, the Khalil Mack game in Columbus is absurd.
Yeah, Khalil Mack starts out on fire against Ohio State.
And even, too, you could look back at the Lance Leipold era for UB. You know, does Tyree Jackson stay? And some of these, you know, incredible running backs that the Bulls have had over the last 25 years, do they stay? You know, it's a lot of questions. I think Allie brought up a good point, too. Josh's temperament probably leads him to stay.
Temperament and personality, and it's probably an easy sell. Because also, the thing about Josh Allen is he's a JUCO transfer.
Yeah.
So you're already showing more belief in him than any other school did, and you are deciding probably to stay there, even with NIL there, because he's already not a prototypical prospect.
Mm-hmm.
He is not a high school recruit. He is now a JUCO transfer already. Does that allow for, you know, a little bit of the leniency of, he's already transferred once, why would he not do it again? Yes. But this is the challenge of a school like Wyoming in a similar bed that UB is in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you have to find the perfect balance between retention and embracing the chaos of the transfer portal. There are going to be players that are looking for a starting role. They come from a bigger school. They're being overlooked. They want the opportunity. If I'm Wyoming, or if I'm UB, I can offer that to somebody. I have a problem at right guard, and you are not being looked at as a starter by Wisconsin, who recruited you. And they're Wisconsin. O-line is their thing.
Right, Big Ten O-lines, oh yeah.
I can get you back in being a starter at the Big Ten if you come play for me for a year. And what do I get in return? I get a 4-star right guard.
You know the way I look at it too, because you mentioned it, like you get a 4-star right guard. I look at it as I get a pretty good used car.
That's exactly what this is.
It's not beat up, but it's pretty good. I'm giving it to my 16-year-old kid. It's their first car.
It's new to
me. And it could run like the wind. It could be perfect. But it is, in fact, a depreciated asset. We all know the old saying, which is the moment a car leaves the lot, it's worth less.
But
that's the same thing. You get a 4-star 17, 18-year-old to commit to Wisconsin.
If I get a 4-star recruit mm-hmm. to play here for a year, and then he bounces back over to the Big Ten somewhere else
mm-hmm.
because he gets tape, it is a win-win. Why is it such positive tape? If he's that good of a player, why is it beneficial to me? That big tape happened here, baby.
Mm-hmm.
That tape happened in a Wyoming. It happened in a UB where I get a guy who was looked at as potentially a starter in a Big Ten school. And he takes a chance on here. Puts together good tape. But that tape is donned with our logo.
Mm-hmm.
That's our field. That's our program.
And you can use, and so on that point, you can use your own players as well as big recruiting tools. Allie brings up the idea of, does Josh Allen leave in the NIL? That is absolutely a potential that he's maybe told by NFL scouts, because that's ultimately a big reason why he stays at Wyoming a second year, doesn't declare for the draft, is work on some things. He talked to Carson Wentz, and
yep.
He stays. They could have also easily have told him, hey, we know blank coach is looking at you. You should really go over there. He's really good at developing talent. Steve Sarkisian at Texas is kind of like the guy many people talk about as developing quarterback talent at Texas. That's why Arch Manning and the Mannings really were comfortable going to Texas. Also, though, let's say he stays. We all know, having remembered that draft process and maybe almost vividly the pro day of Josh Allen looking at his receivers going, is this what he's been throwing to all year? Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Now, Wyoming also could have the thing of, we have an NFL quarterback. We just need one or two receivers to jump here. Nothing crazy, but one or two guys to get here, maybe another middle linebacker to really round out the roster, and we can go to a Rose Bowl. That was Allen's big thing going back his junior year, winning the Mountain West and potentially going to a Rose Bowl. You can use it both ways. You can use talent that you keep, that you retain, and coaches have talked about this, that maybe the most important thing is actually retaining talent, to also recruit more talent.
But if I'm, for example, I'm a Fran Brown, and I'm like, hey,
Syracuse,
I can offer you the ACC, an automatic playoff qualifying bid if we win the conference,
mm-hmm.
and you'll have better talent to throw to here.
Yep. Or you're just going to play a better system that's going to show off your talents.
Yeah.
Kyle McCord.
Exactly. You can look at this in both ways. It is a fascinating thing, and it is the struggle that you're going to see within UB here and schools like a Wyoming forever now. This is your future. If you are a fan of a UB or a Wyoming or another small school or even a lower tier program in a major conference like a Wake Forest, a Purdue.
I even look at, you know, Texas this year, Matthew Golden popped off for them. Golden was at Houston. Houston's not a small program.
No.
But they weren't good, and so he left to go to Texas and to put a more tape, better tape, onto his resume going into a draft. He was a non-factor in the 2025 draft class until about midway through last season at Texas. And he still would have probably been like kind of a non-factor, maybe a little bit like a Tank Dell, where maybe his talent pops. He's maybe a fourth, fifth round pick, and he's kind of that sneaky guy that you get. But maybe not. I also look at a guy, Caden, name blanking on me, played at Liberty. He's now at Colorado. He's likely going to be their starter at Colorado. He left Liberty because Liberty wasn't throwing the ball particularly well. He had a great junior season or sophomore season, had a bad junior season. He's going to Colorado where Shedeur Sanders threw the ball over the yard. And so that's going to be a thing too. You're going to have to recruit guys that work for you. But I do look at places like Wyoming and UB, and UB in particular this year, having, you know, 9 wins last year, they retain a ton of their defense. Red Murdoch was the Robin to Shane Dolak's Batman, and yet he's retained. They bring a lot of their talent back. And even the quarterback they got started games at UConn. It's not the Big Ten, but he's coming over from the American Conference. It is arguably a better conference than the MAC, I think, inarguably.
Right.
And he also was a backup at Kansas State. He's gotten a lot of experience. You can get experience by sitting on the bench and then playing 1-2 years of college football. There's ways you can attack it. It is not all going to be on the defensive. It's not always going to be that way. It can be that way, and I've mentioned it too when I talk about Pete Lembo and UB. In this era of college football, you will find out much faster if your coach has got it or not. Yes. There is not going to be, well, we've got to wait 3-4 years to see his first recruiting class develop. No. The first recruiting class is that transfer class they bring in when they get hired.
And you know what's kind of fascinating? And I'd imagine there will be more of this wisdom being parted from an unlikely source.
Mm-hmm.
JUCO coaches.
Yep.
Junior college coaches have a 2-year window to fit their players into their schemes. It is very much a quick transition type thing. So the top tier junior colleges when it comes to football are going to be people that you'd want to get wisdom from if you are a mid-major or a low-end Power 5 team, like a Vanderbilt, Purdue, Wake Forest, et cetera, et cetera. And you need their wisdom on how to, A, have schemes that will be easy to learn for players,
mm-hmm.
but B, be effective enough that you will get promising tape and try to have a modicum of success. Knowing that you are probably going to lose a talented player or two because of the success you have, but how do you replace it? When do you know to retain? When do you know
mm-hmm.
to let them go and go after the replacement in an unlikely source or recruiting heavy in that position instead?
Yeah.
It's a fine balancing act that you're going to have to go through. And I think when it deals with transfer portals, JUCO coaches are going to have a wisdom that needs to be consulted.
Yeah. We talked a lot about this with college basketball. Also, funny enough, the NIL conversation, college mid-majors going after more D2 talent, because that market is flush with really D1 players that just haven't gotten the look yet. You're seeing that now with college football. It might be the JUCO route. It also might be
FCS schools.
FCS schools, I think, absolutely. Or it might be, honestly, embrace the fact that you might be the school that gets you to the big school.
And if you can
embrace it. You won't have the guys that stay 3-4 years, but you might have, like, you know, Allie brings up Allen was, you know, cemented in the community. Cam Newton was too for Auburn. He was only there for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace being the school that gets you to the big school, because it could lead to a lot of success. You just may not have guys that you remember playing for you for 3-4 years. And that's not always a bad thing. College football and college basketball, they're only there for 4 years, maybe 5-6 because of, you know, COVID and then red shirts. They're not there forever. It's not the pros. So maybe embrace that a little bit into only getting a few guys here and there because they want play time. They need play time now. Hey, we're going to get you to the Wisconsins, the Alabamas, all that stuff.
And more in particular, the 1AA page on this.
Mm-hmm.
If you can combine a cheeky NCAA tournament run.
Oh, yeah.
With getting a couple players transferred out to FBS schools. You suddenly become a powerhouse within your league, within your division of football. And that's another thing that we will not know much about, but that's another story for that level of college football.
Yeah. It's not perfect. I still want there to be some, you know, safety bars so that, yes, the big teams can't, like, just literally buy everybody. I think we'll get there, though, because you will have some of the bigger schools that are like, hey, we also got to pay for basketball and stuff like that. We can't keep doing this. The boosters are, you know, hemorrhaging money. But we'll see how it ultimately plays out. The big boys have always played bigger than everybody else. It's been true forever. But I think there is a window where some mid-majors can really have some fun in this era. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, here until 12 o'clock. This is WGR.
Last segment here before we go and kick it off to Sabres Live. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, thanks for hanging out with us here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Wrapping this one up, and just to touch back on something that we had in the first hour, which was that ESPN quarterback rankings, according to GMs, coaches, NFL executives, scouts, yada, yada, yada. I do have one problem with that ranking.
Mm-hmm.
It gave you the high point and the low point of each player, and some dude out there has Lamar Jackson ranked as the sixth best quarterback in the National Football League. I get trying to be different, and I get that Lamar Jackson has stunk in the playoffs, but who are you ranking ahead of Lamar Jackson that isn't the rest of that big four?
That's the thing, is I've thought about that. It's like, are you all of a sudden telling me Jalen Hurts, because he's won a Super Bowl, you're going to put him over him? Jane Daniels, are you going to put over him after 1 year? Stafford? Stafford, are you going to go? Because now, Stafford, his highest ranking is 4.
Could that be that ballot?
I think it is that ballot.
It has to be. That's not a mistake at that point. That's not a coincidence.
I think his highest ranking was 4, and Stafford, and you probably had Lamar at 6, and then Jaden stays at 5.
Yeah, that's probably what that is.
Because
people
you could also,
who won Super Bowls.
And you could argue, too, Jaden Daniels, first year, already had more playoff success than Lamar Jackson. First year makes it to the NFC Championship. Kind of arguably does it by himself, because his team was not very good.
They had good spots,
but they were winning that based off of just Jaden Daniels putting up absurd throws and turnovers by Detroit.
But they put the pressure on Detroit by scoring.
Yeah, they did.
But Detroit was also weak in defense, but sometimes teams don't recognize that or care.
I think this is a big part of it, or care.
I think you're absolutely right that I don't think it's Daniels. I think it's Stafford and Hurts, because they won a Super Bowl. Therefore, they're on hallowed ground.
Let's see what Hurts' highest ranking was. Ah, highest ranking is 6.
So it wasn't Hurts.
So it's not. It's Stafford and Daniels.
It's got to be.
I think it would be Stafford and Daniels.
Yeah. Either way, that's all for today here on the Northtown Automotive Extras Point Show. But I got great news for you. Zach and I are back all throughout the week here on the same time slot. And as we will do every day of this week, we'll kick to the Sabres Live coming up next here on WGR.